Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and today we're joined by Tyler Rossi.
When you're a recruiter, and especially when you're a niche recruiter in a space, right, you want to go above and beyond just making placements. I mean, that's obviously the bread and butter of your business. That's how you survive. But you want to think, how could I serve my industry?
Tyler is the president of American Dream Search and the host of the Recruiter of Steel podcast.
But I've noticed that the metals industry in particular doesn't have the type of content or technological marketing, digital marketing that some of these other industries like tech do.
He's one of the top headhunters in America for sales talent in the steel and metals industry.
I want to go all in on the industry and be the go-to authority. I want the podcast. I want to be at the industry conferences and events. I want to be everywhere.
Tyler's journey is a testament to resilience. In September 2023, he was unexpectedly laid off from a six-figure sales job.
Time my wife was due with our firstborn child in 8 weeks. And I was hitting my goals as a sales professional there. I mean, nothing was too off the wall or crazy, but I got the word on Friday afternoon and I got a call and said, you know, it's not working out. We're going to have to let you go. No severance. No nothing.
Tyler went all in on building his recruiting business in 2023. And despite a challenging start with zero income for 6 months,
we went from nothing in the first 6 months to billing close to just shy of 250 in the last 6 months.
Fantastic. That's a huge turnaround. That's incredible. Tyler's story is one of determination and success in the face of adversity.
But we've still had success despite that. I think that might be the most thing I'm proud of, is I've still been able to do this with...
I'm excited to dive into his experience and insights today. Tyler, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Mark. As you probably know, your podcast is one of the main reasons why I'm even in this business. So it's an absolute honor. I have a little bit of imposter syndrome being here because I've looked up to you and a lot of your guests, but I appreciate the time.
Well, that's kind of you to say, but you absolutely deserve to be here. It's so funny, Tyler, because almost everyone I have on the show says the same thing, that they feel like imposter syndrome coming on the show. So that's a common feeling, but no, like, I'm excited. I think you've got a really amazing story to tell, and I want to learn from you. So take me back. How did you get involved in the recruiting industry in the first place?
Yeah, so it probably started from my job out of school, which was doing sales for Indeed.com, largest job site in the world.
Yes.
Wasn't necessarily recruiting, and I had no formal recruiting training experience, never worked at an agency or anything like that. But at Indeed, you would sell recruitment advertisers to employers all across the country. So I've probably talked with over 1,000 employers during my time at Indeed, just with how many calls you'd be making and how many accounts I'd be managing. But I always had a desire to run my own business, right? I was never the type to want to be part of a large corporation, be a number on a spreadsheet. But I didn't really know what type of business I wanted to do. I tried my hand at resume writing for a little bit, and that wasn't so fun. I think the fees we make in recruiting are a lot better than the fees we make with resume writing.
Absolutely.
So I did a little bit of research. I was trying to find the right business model, looking up YouTube videos, listening to podcasts. And I then stumbled onto the recruitment business. And it was funny because when I was working at Indeed, one of the best products I was good at selling, which was one of our recruitment products. We had a product that would, you know, basically Indeed's foray into direct hire recruiting. And I was always good at selling that product. So I said, you know what, maybe let me try looking a little bit more into recruitment. And I looked up everything recruitment, everything on YouTube, everything podcast-wise. And while we were in the pandemic, trying to keep our sanity, going on 10 walks a day with our dogs, getting out of the house, I stumbled onto your podcast. This is probably 2020, 2021. And I would just listen to it. And I'd be fascinated to hear, you know, different stories from seven-figure billers, people that have bootstrapped agencies in their basement to now seven, eight figures, the low overhead that was associated with the business. It just really spoke to me. And it was also something I had prior knowledge of, working my current job. So I said, you know what, this is probably the route I want to go. And then I went down the whole rabbit hole and ended up founding my agency technically in January of 2022, but never had the guts to jump in full time. This was a part-time thing I was doing on top of, you know, full-time work, on top of being a full-time husband and planning a wedding and all that. So it wasn't very successful until I jumped in full-time, and that's how the business is, right? It needs all of you. But yeah, it started off as just a spark of the entrepreneurial bug caught me, right? And I then went down a rabbit hole and ended up finding your podcast, and then started off part-time, and now we're here full-time.
Fantastic. So. That's so interesting. And so I guess the first, yeah, I agree. This is a really difficult business to do part-time, right? And especially if you're trying to get a new business off the ground, I'm not surprised that it didn't really work out until you were forced to kind of dive in full-time. Yeah. Yeah, but at least you were able to dip your toe in the water and kind of, you know, build your knowledge. Like, it sounds like you were doing a lot of personal development and learning during that phase anyway, and you had the full-time income. So that kind of gave you the foundation, which then when you dove in full-time, you already kind of, you know, knew, you know, what you were doing rather than learning from the point that you actually launched your business. So how did you choose metals as the industry?
Yeah, good question, because I know nothing about it. yeah, so funny thing, as I was doing the business part-time, I got a couple clients here and there, mm-hmm. all over the map. One was a telecommunications law firm. The other was a luxury coffee equipment company. And then the other one was a steel service center. And I ended up making two part-time placements while I was working full-time with that steel service center. And great extra side money. But what I knew was I started to learn the terminology of the world of steel, of the world of metals. I started to build a little bit of a candidate network. I understood what they were looking for. And I said, you know what? If I'm going to niche down, this is going to be the place. Now, when I first dove into the business full time, which was September of last year, almost a year to this recording date, I was hitting everything and anything. I wanted to be the sales recruiter, whether it's tech, whether it's steel, whether it's anything in between. I was going at everything sales, and it flopped. First 6 months, I made $0. And I said, you know what? I really need to make a change or this thing isn't going to work. And it's now or never, because, you know, if I was going to go back and get another job, it would be the same thing. You'd be doing it part-time and it never would take off. So I had to figure something out. And I said, you know what? I've built up a network in the steel community space. I understand it. I could talk about the terminology now. Let me try going after some other companies. And then it worked. So,
okay. This is really interesting. So it's almost by accident. You had some initial success in that industry, and then you decided to like see how far that, you know, that could go. So let's rewind a bit, because there's a lot to unpack there from what you just shared. So take me back to the point you're doing this full part time, not really working, because as we've already discussed, it really requires you to give a lot to make this business successful, but. Why, like, what happened when you were laid off? What was going on? And, you know, tell me about that experience.
Yeah. Talk about unfortunate timing. So basically at that time, my wife was due with our firstborn child in 8 weeks. And I was hitting my goals as a sales professional there. I mean, nothing was too off the wall or crazy, but I think there might have been some financial issues or whatever the case may be. I'm not even going to speak too much on that company, but I got the word on Friday afternoon, and I got a call and said, you know, it's not working out. We're gonna have to let you go. No severance, no nothing. Just got the word, and I said, okay. So obviously, I went upstairs, told my wife, we talked about it, and you know, then that weekend. She wanted to cheer me up a little bit. So we ended up going to the grocery store on football Sunday and, you know, get a couple snacks and have a nice day to relax and stuff. And as we're walking around, these two girls end up approaching us and they're doing some volunteer work and raising money for their church. And they say, hey, would you like to buy a poster? And I said, yeah, like, that's fine. We'll support you and everything. And the first poster that they took out to show us was this. And it was a poster of Jesus lending out his hand to help you go through troubled waters. And there's a story about that in the Bible. I won't get too far into it, but basically at that point, that was a sign to me that said, it's going to be okay. I got you. And I always knew in the back of my mind that, you know what? This is my moment. Even when after the layoff happened, I told my wife, you know what? This was a company that promised me, we're going to help you provide for your family. We're going to take care of you. And in an instant, that was taken away. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm never going to rely on another employer again mm-hmm. for what I need to do. So I'm going to rely on myself. I had this business. I always wanted to do it full time. It's now or never. So, and then I got that little sign from God. So that Monday morning, I came down here at about probably 4:30 in the morning and fired up the laptop and just dove headfirst into this industry. And now we're here today.
So. Amazing. All right. I love that. And so laid off on the Friday, divine inspiration over the weekend, and then start the business on Monday morning at 4:30 a.m. I love that. The first 6 months then, you mentioned that you were trying to do any type of sales recruiting, and which makes sense because you are a salesman. So you know salespeople, you understand that type of candidate, that type of role. I recruited salespeople as well. I don't know if you knew that when I ran a desk.
Okay.
And for the exact same reason, I was like, well, this is something I understand. And I feel like I can relate to the candidates. And I feel like it just felt logical that that's what I should recruit. But you were trying to recruit sales in every different type of industry, right?
Pretty much. Yeah. I was going after anything and everything. I then started to narrow it down towards industrial sales.
Okay.
But it still wasn't narrow enough. It was too much too soon.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I just had this conversation with one of our clients recently who's wanted to specialize in sales recruiting. And I said, you know, that's awesome, but sales isn't really a niche. It's still so broad, right? Yeah. And if you think of how many millions of companies there are in North America, and they all need salespeople, you can't approach millions of companies, right? It's just too vast. You need to find a way to narrow that down. So you initially narrowed it down to industrial sales. Mm-hmm. Why that?
It's just interesting to me.
Okay.
I felt at the time tech was saturated. Also, tech was going through a little bit of a downturn.
That's
too.
True.
A lot of layoffs going on and stuff like that. So I didn't want to touch that space. I thought it was saturated from a recruitment perspective. I thought it was in a downturn. And then the industrial world was new to me, so it was kind of interesting. But I still didn't have the full direction of steel yet.
Got it. So, Tyler, though, what's going through your head? Like, how did you manage yourself and your time for that, you know, business launch? And then what were you thinking and feeling as you're working hard, but the results are not materializing yet?
That was hard. I mean, the first 6 months, like I said, we made $0 from September to March. And when I would say the new year rolled around, I knew I had to make a change. My goal at that point was to try to get a placement in the door before the new year. And we were close. I had, you know, some split partnerships that we're working on. I did grab a couple clients that weren't the best clients for me mm-hmm. During that time, but things fell south. Things didn't work out. And I knew I needed to make that change. So in January, I said, you know what? I'm going all in on the steel industry. That's going to be my focus. I'm going to, as crazy as it sounds, go smaller to go bigger, right?
Mm, niche down. Exactly. Right, right.
Find the riches. So the riches are in the niches. So
correct.
I said, I'm going to do that. I also approached somebody for help, and I want to give him a shout out on this podcast. His name's Scott Tuttle of, I think it's Huntington Search, I think it is. Okay. Hunter Sterling Search, that's his firm. Scott Tuttle, very active in the Facebook group, Herd. And, you know, there, I approached him because I saw some of his posts and some of the things he was contributing in there. And I said, hey, you know, I know you're building multiple six figures. I would like, you know, to get to that same level. And obviously, any insight or advice you could share. And, between me niching down, between him giving me some pointers on just certain contract terms, MPC marketing, all different things that helped me drive business and close deals. We then saw our first placement in March. But yeah, those first 6 months were pretty rough.
Woo! You must have, that must have been a celebration in the Rossi household.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, and wait a second, you baby must have been born somewhere in this, around this, like what? When did that, when was the baby born?
Baby was born in November. So okay. She's coming up on her 1-year-old birthday now.
Oh, so 2 months in, so you launch your business, 2 months later, you've got a new baby, still no money coming in. And, like you must have had like self-doubt creeping in at that stage because, you know, I mean, that's part of being human, right? Is you can doubt yourself, but when
sure.
you're not seeing the return, like how did you keep yourself motivated and productive?
Well, I absolutely want to shout out my wife for continuing to support me throughout the entirety of that process, even when that self-doubt did creep in, because even for the best of us, it does, right? Yeah. If you're not seeing results for a long time, you're going to start to doubt yourself.
Definitely.
But she was a supporter all the way through. What was really fortunate for us too is that she worked remotely as well. And she was able to carry our health insurance too. So that's a big thing, especially in this country.
Yes.
So she was able to carry that. And, you know, then she went on a maternity leave. And, you know, obviously it took a week or so or at least to help her out with the baby and just be fully present and yeah. learn everything. But it was also, I couldn't take, you know, a 6 to 12 week paternal leave. I needed to get this thing going. So
yes.
I give her credit for giving me the space and the time to do that, especially in that postpartum era. And that really helped because I was able to still be as productive as possible in those months. And then I realized I needed to make that switch. I did in January. And then even when January hit, I kind of knew this was going in the right direction, even though it took an additional 2 months to get those placements.
Yeah.
Once we made that switch to niching down into the steel industry,
yeah,
that was kind of the clarity that I needed to say, okay, I think we're on the right track.
All right. Awesome. So shout out to Mrs. American Dream. And that's awesome. And shout out to Scott Tuttle, was it? Who
Scott
gave you some
Tuttle.
Mentorship
yep.
during that time.
He did.
So the first placement, how did that come about? How did you win the client? And, you know, what was your overall approach as far as, you know, building a new business from scratch?
Yeah. So the first client actually came way of LinkedIn automation.
Great.
But very targeted the way that we did it. So the key I always wanted to do was I'll implement these tools, but I never want to come across as a robot or
Correct.
Somebody just spamming out
Absolutely.
Stuff. Because I did make that mistake when I first started. I was doing the mass emails, you know, the 1,000+ emails or whatever it was, going out to different companies. And what that ends up yielding is the wrong clients, right? I wanted mm-hmm. to get the right clients. So I was very targeted in my approach. I found a company with a relatively low-level sales position, more entry-level, and filled it in 30 days. But it was still in the industry. It was still something that I wanted to do. And then from my prior company that I had part-time, I actually made another placement with them in March as well. So I ended up getting two placements for that month.
All right. Awesome. That's fantastic. So this is maybe a good, since you brought it up, what's your tech stack, Tyler? You mentioned LinkedIn automation. What are the tools that you rely on, and or especially the ones that you really find beneficial?
Sure. So I use Sales Navigator for LinkedIn. I don't use Recruiter. It's definitely more economical. For LinkedIn automation, I actually use Skylead. Skylead has done...
Okay, I don't know that. Skylead, S-K-Y-L-E-A-D.
Yes, okay. S-K-Y-L-E-A-D. From what I've heard, it's worked better than Dripify for some people. So
okay.
I ended up going with them, and they've been very good. Very good customer service, very good UI interface to to navigate everything. So that was good.
Excellent.
I also use Crelate for my CRM. And I was doing MPC marketing through Apollo for email sequences.
Yes.
So those are my big bread and butter.
Fantastic. All right. You obviously are doing MPC marketing. What else were you doing? So you've got your automation sequences on LinkedIn, you're expanding your network, you're following up with people there. You've got MPC marketing happening on email campaigns. Did you know that many of our listeners first heard of the Resilient Recruiter from a friend or colleague? Word of mouth really is the best form of advertising. So if you enjoy the show and get value from it, I'd be grateful if you would pay it forward by sharing it with others. Have a think for a moment. Who in your network might benefit from this podcast? Maybe a current or former colleague or a fellow member of a recruiting association? It would mean the world to me if you would drop them a quick email, text, or LinkedIn message with a link to the show. Thank you so much for your support. Now let's get back to the interview. What else were you doing to really, you know, drive business development?
Yeah, so the key to the turnaround and success that I've seen, because again, we went from nothing in the first 6 months to billing close to just shy of 250 in the last 6 months.
Fantastic. That's a huge turnaround. That's incredible.
It definitely is on the upswing. So, and look, it's still nowhere near where I want to be in my professional career and where some of your guests are that are doing a lot more than that. But I think there is a stark turnaround there. And if I could give any advice to anybody listening to this, it would be you have to niche down. You have to be the go-to authority in whatever space that you want to play. And even as small as you think it could be, there's a lot of money to be made. And there's at least enough money to make a living off of. Because if you're charging healthy fees, which my average fee is about $25,000, you make 10 of those in a year. I mean, you take 2 months off, you make a placement once a month. I mean, that's a great living.
That's good living, so, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's really all it takes. And you'd be surprised because even if you niche down to something so, so specific, like accountants in the East Coast or in New England or whatever, you could probably make yourself the go-to authority in that space and get 10 searches a year that's going to get you there, you know? And then you could expand from there. But the biggest mistake that I made was I went too broad, trying to hit everything. And then you put yourself in a box where you're just one of a million recruiters that are in their inbox and they delete, delete, delete. But the change that I made that really sealed the deal was I'm going to be this quote unquote recruiter of steel, right? There's probably a handful of headhunters that just play in that space, and I could probably literally count them on one hand.
Exactly. So Tyler, just to amplify what you just said, you've immediately reduced the competition from, there's probably, 20,000 recruiting and staffing companies in the U.S.?
Sure.
Maybe more. I don't know the exact number.
I think it's 26 or something.
Okay, there you go. So you've just cut it down from 26,000 to 5, right? You're one of 5. So right away, that is powerful. And as you said, it's funny because people, you said like get smaller to grow bigger or something along those lines. What was your expression? Sure.
Yeah, you gotta go smaller to go bigger.
Go smaller to go bigger. Down. Exactly. Yeah. People are scared to do that because they feel like they're missing out, like they're going to lose opportunities. But the reality is that based on our clients, we've worked with hundreds of successful recruiting and search and staffing firm owners, as well as the people I've interviewed on this podcast, over 200 people at this stage. 95% of the most successful people are focused on being niche market specialists and really mastering that market. So although it feels like you're cutting off a lot of opportunity, the reality is you are going to make more money by doing that. So you absolutely did the right thing. So then how did things progress from there? Talk to me after that first initial couple of placements, then how did you really build on that to get momentum? One of the things I definitely want to hear from you on is developing that authority, being a respected authority in your niche, and you know, you've launched your own podcast. So talk to me about that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I narrowed down into the steel industry, I know I wanted to be this go-to authority. So the question then is, how do you establish that you're the go-to authority, right? Your value as a recruiter is who you bring to the table. So what I wanted to do was A, expand my network, and I want to be connected with all the people in this industry. So I set up two campaigns on my automation. One was for VPs, directors, CXO in the steel industry, right? The VP of sales, those decision makers. And then the second was candidates. It was territory managers, regional sales managers, inside salespeople, all of those people that I could potentially place. And all I did, Mark, was I said, I would send a message, I would connect with them, and I'd say, hey, Mark, I place top sales talent in the steel industry. Would love to connect and be a resource for you down the line. That's it. There's no pitch. A couple of days later, it goes by and says, appreciate the connection, Mark. Just wondering if you're open to new opportunities this year. And then if they are, I would talk. And it didn't matter if I had an opportunity or not, because A, that candidate could turn into an NPC, or B, maybe they could turn into a client. Maybe they could just fill my network, right? And then I'm connected with these people. So what I started to do was build my network, and I did that on autopilot. And right now, I think I'm close to around 7,000 connections or followers on LinkedIn, and probably 2/3 of that is in the steel industry. So now what happens is when I do a post, which is usually somewhat related to either the world of steel or the world of recruiting, and I make sure to post every day on LinkedIn, 8 a.m. sharp, I will get interaction and engagement from that network, which then expands it to the greater network,
yeah,
which then showcases me every day in your feed as an authority, as this go-to person. And between the connections that I'm sending out, the messages, the content, the occasional NPC email where I'm only showcasing a really stellar candidate, you start to establish yourself as, okay, I'm in the steel industry. I need commercial sales talent. That's my go-to guy, because everyone sees him, everyone's talking about him, and he seems to know his stuff. That was it.
Absolutely. It's so interesting. I feel like I'm having deja vu here, Tyler. And the reason I say that is because I think the last couple of interviews I've done, which have been with clients of ours. So the one that was published most recently, Alec Borland, he recruits accountants in Ohio and CFOs and people like that. And he, we had this similar conversation about the importance of posting on LinkedIn and sharing value and becoming a recognized authority. And then I also recently interviewed another client of ours, Sarah Englade, and she also talked about this. So there's definitely like success leaves clues, right? This is something that works, and you've proven that that it can be effective. Have you been able to, the pushback I get, because we promote this to our members and our community, that the easiest way to get started with digital marketing and inbound marketing is by building your presence on LinkedIn, posting consistently, and sharing things of value, insight about your industry, as well as more personal stuff so that you're relatable and not just another recruiter out to make a buck, right? And but people are like, that seems like a lot of work. And what's the ROI? Like, how do you quantify success? Are you able to speak to that?
I can. Yeah, absolutely. And just another thing, just to touch on that note of niching down. I mean, what you said, right? You have interviewed somebody who's doing, you know, CPAs and accountants in Ohio. Great. Because if you're an accounting firm in Ohio, that's probably where you're going to look first. right? Think about this. If you're in your home and your AC unit breaks, do you want to call the jack of all trades guy that does everything? Or do you want to call the specific guy that is the technician for the company that's your AC unit, right? You're going to call that because you know, okay, he's worked on this before. I'm safe going with him. That's the same thing in the recruitment industry, right? Companies don't want to go to a person that's a jack of all trades that's recruited plumbers, salespeople, accountants, IT people. They want to go to somebody that knows their world, can speak their language, understands what they need, and then they feel less risk going with you. So
yep,
that's my point there. As far as an ROI on what this has done for me, I mean, I would say the majority of my business now, I would say, is inbound. Most of it is coming inbound to me. I haven't run an MPC campaign in probably 3-4 months. Because all of this is coming to me and I have enough business with it. And it's because, again, I've established myself as that authority. It's brought in multiple six figures for me, just doing posting and just interacting on LinkedIn. I got a client put a meeting on my calendar the other day. I spoke with their head of talent acquisition, and she was telling me, our CEO actually checked out your LinkedIn profile. This is $300-400 million company, and said that we should contact you.
Oh, fantastic. That's awesome, man. I love that. Yeah. So the LinkedIn is one piece of it. You mentioned that you post every day, and then obviously people engage with that. And the thing I want to emphasize to listeners is to realize that actually inbound and outbound go hand in hand, because when you connect with someone on LinkedIn, they're going to start seeing your content, right? So that's an outbound inbound strategy. But equally, then if someone's seeing your content and then you reach out to them, you call them or what have you, then they already feel like they know you. It's not a cold call anymore. So it actually increases the response rate to cold calls, cold emails, et cetera, because you do have that personal brand. How did the podcast come about?
Initially, my podcast was called Let's Talk Talent. And under that podcast, it was more recruitment focused, right? I was talking with some TA folks, some recruiters, occasionally an executive and a manager here or there. I enjoyed it, right? I enjoyed kind of showing my expertise in the recruitment world, talking with others, learning from others. But I wanted it to be more industry focused. And I really, again, I want to go all in on the industry and be the go-to authority. I want the podcast. I want to be at the industry conferences and events. I want to be everywhere, because the less in obscurity you are and the more exposure you have, the more business is going to come to you.
100%. Yeah.
In the form of clients and candidates, right? So I started that. I did about 10, 11, 12 episodes or so. And then my last episode, I actually did with somebody who became a client of mine, a very good client, and was in the steel industry, spoke very well. We had a great conversation. I got a lot of messages that came in from that conversation from candidates and potential clients that saw that interview. And I said, you know what? I'll probably be better off doing something for this industry, not just for my business. It'll definitely help my business. But I've noticed that the metals industry in particular doesn't have the type of content or, technological marketing, digital marketing that some of these other industries like tech do. So there's a massive opportunity in the industrial side, I think, to be the go-to authority and embrace social. So with the podcast, as I'm sure you'll probably do with this one, you could cut up clips. You can use those clips on LinkedIn. Candidates will see them. Potential clients will see them. And then every day, that'll be part of my content strategy. They will see you as the go-to authority. They'll see you talking with leaders in the space. They'll see you that you understand the industry and that you could talk to it. And it's just going to be another way to not only help the business, but spread the word of steel, because it's also an industry where the average age, I think, is someone in their mid-50s. And we need new people. We need young people excited about getting into steel. There's a lot of money to be made. So if I could help out in that end too, it'd be good.
Brilliant, Tyler. That was such a good decision. I'm sure looking back on it, it's a no-brainer, right? You're like, oh, of course, that makes total sense that the podcast should be directly aligned with the niche market that I'm, you know, focused sure. on. But sometimes there's this evolutionary process where you're just figuring things out and you know, kind of, you know, and then it, you kind of, you move along a path and then it gets clearer and clearer how you should move forward. So,
right.
Yeah. So we've helped probably, I don't know, a dozen recruiting firm owners to launch podcasts. And, so insider tip for our listeners, if you are thinking about doing this, for all the reasons Tyler just said, it's a brilliant vehicle for being the go-to authority, but also developing your network and relationships with potential clients, and also the influencers in your space, because yeah. the credibility of your guests rubs off on you, right? And they will probably share it with their network, because let's say you interview the CEO of a steel company, they probably don't get interviewed that often, right? They're probably like, so it's not like they're, on in the media all the time. So they're proud. They're like proud of the being on the, a Recruiter of Steel podcast, and they're going to share it with their network on LinkedIn.
Sure.
And so all of their network are seeing, oh, who's this Tyler Rossi guy? I'm gonna check him out.
And let me just point this out yeah. too, Mark. You know, when you're a recruiter, and especially when you're a niche recruiter in a space, right, you want to go above and beyond just making placements. I mean, that's obviously the bread and butter of your business. That's how you survive. But you want to think, how could I serve my industry? And when I look at the steel industry, I see a couple of things, right? I see there's a lack of young talent in the industry, desperate need for young talent. There's also a desperate need to adopt technology. A lot of the business is done via handshake, is the way it's been for decades. Mm-hmm. So there's a need for technology to come into the business. There's also a need for women to come into the business as well. It's 80% male. So yeah, you start to see all those things, and then you say, how could I contribute to that? How could I be not just a recruiter for my clients, but a recruiter for the industry as a whole? So my thought process around that is, if I can go all in on social, showcase with the steel industry, right? Interview interesting guests, let them talk about their company, their opportunities, what they do on a day-to-day, how much they make, right? Because there's money to be made too. That can get some people interested, some young people, right? Maybe a diverse crowd. The other thing too is, I've partnered with a local videographer here, and what we're going to be offering our clients is videography services. So
smart.
Yeah. So essentially, you know, they have, you know, massive facilities, all these different operations going. I mean, if you see the way steel is made, it's crazy, right? There's a lot of fire and it's down and dirty, but we should be showcasing that. And I think, you know, what I'll offer to my clients with that is, I'll say, hey, you know, your company culture, video is big and it's the next thing. And that's what young people are seeing specifically. So if you want, we can come down to your offices. I'll have my professional videographer with me. We'll do one day of shooting, interview, you know, some other executives. They could talk. We'll have a recruitment style professional video. We'll cut it up into social media edits where you could then distribute and share on your social. And, you know, we'll bake it into our placement fee, because, you know, it's a wash, right? This, at this point, I'd rather serve you and be more entrenched in our relationship and give you that extra added value than just be the guy placing your roles. And I figure that'll go a long way down the long run. And, it's just different things like that. It's sprucing up a bit, being more than just the guy making placement.
Tyler, I love that. That's a brilliant. So first of all, I love your philosophy around your podcast and how you are serving the community that you recruit for, and advocating for that industry. And what that does is really elevates you from being just a recruiter. Nothing wrong with being a recruiter. It's a industry we should sure. be proud of. But it elevates you to being a leader and not just a recruiter. So like a leader within the steel industry, a figure that people recognize, someone who, you know, they've heard of, who is helping the industry, right? Not just helping themselves. So sure. that is brilliant. But the video idea is so powerful. I think, I mean, we're already starting to see an explosion in video, right? And so Sanjay Vyas, who works with me, he's celebrating his 1-year anniversary. So even though we're a tiny company, I've invested in a full-time, you know, videographer and podcast guy. And I think offering that as a service to your clients through this partnership is absolutely genius, Tyler. A, it's a huge differentiator for you, because it seems very unlikely that any of your competitors would be doing that. Secondly, it's actually promoting their brand and then helping you to fill the job, because you have more, you know, marketing materials to promote the company with.
Yeah, and we'll get some content for our business as well.
Exactly. So and not only that, but that's really tying those clients into you, right? Because after you've gone, you've done all that for them and you've invested in the video, and the video is co-branded. It's got their branding, but obviously it's related to you. You know, you're really protecting those clients, making it very hard for them to go anywhere else, because why would they?
Right. Especially if it's baked into the placement fee, then they're going to want to make another placement with you. So that's the whole thing, right? I mean, you want to make sure that that relationship isn't just surface level. You want to be there as much as possible.
Yeah. When you say baked in, what does that mean exactly?
So I don't want to get too much in detail with it, but essentially there'll be a fixed cost to come down there, the travel, the video production itself, the editing, which the videographer will do. And, you know, that cost is baked into a certain amount, and then we'll charge the client that amount. And then once we make another placement fee, we'll just subtract that fee from what the videography fee was.
Great.
And then at that point, it's a wash for them, right? They're basically getting a 2-in-1, a great hire and a great video. And that's what we're offering. I haven't done it yet, but there's some clients that could potentially be using it. So we'll be offering that pretty soon.
That is awesome. You could even have a landing page for each client where you've got like some of the videos, like the interviews with the leader and the executives and stuff, and where people can book an interview with you and or download like the job, you know, brochure or profile or what have you.
And opportunities then are endless.
When you're marketing that opportunity to candidates, they can go to a dedicated landing page on your website to learn about the opportunity, and it creates that exclusivity. And it's still quite rare for recruiters to have that kind of stuff. So it really stands out. And especially if you're in a market, I think that kind of approach is more common, still not common, but it's probably more common in like technology roles or that type of thing. But if you're in an industry where they're a bit behind in terms of technology, which you alluded to earlier, then you're like way up here compared to everybody else in that industry. Yeah. It's cool. I love that.
And one thing I just want to touch on, Mark, too, that I forgot to, when you asked your prior question, the importance of niching down, right? Something like this with video, where we're showcasing, you know, different companies that we work with in the metals industry. You're probably going to get some inbound messages from candidates, right, that are interested from that. But let's say maybe they're not the best fit for that opportunity. When you're niched down, you then put that candidate in your database, you find out what he specializes in, what he or she does, all that. But when you're niched down in a specific industry and then you get another opportunity, you could still use that candidate for that different opportunity.
Right, exactly.
There's a recyclability in candidates, which saves you so much time. Because 100%. That's what I needed to do with this business. I didn't touch on it with you before, but my wife and I haven't had childcare for our daughter. So we've been juggling this back and forth. So I don't work a full 8-hour day. I don't have the time to do it. So I needed to be as efficient as possible. And when you niche down and you start talking with candidates, right, that search doesn't start over from zero when you get another search. You already have a laundry list of candidates that you've spoken with that could be a potential fit. And then you just call the guy back or shoot him a text. It saves you so much time.
Exactly. It's genius, Tyler, because then no conversation is ever a waste. Right?
Never a waste.
They're either a client or a potential client for the future. They're a candidate for a job that you've got now, or you might be able to place them in the future. They yeah. could be a referral source, you know, so you're networking and getting more names from each person you speak to. You get insider information and intelligence and leads and, you know, market knowledge. Every conversation you're going to get something beneficial from, right? So yeah, sure. I love that. But hold on, you just sort of skipped over something or very significant. How many hours per week are you working on average, Tyler? Don't be embarrassed. The less, the more I'm going to be impressed.
If because you define it by on my laptop, 4 hours maybe, and then the other hours, maybe taking her on a walk and making some calls.
Okay.
A lot of business is done on the go. I'll make a call sometimes when I'm in the car or, you know, I'm taking her on a walk or something. Yes. But because, you know, I mean, it's really tough to do because, you know, one of us is, let's say she has a meeting, right? I got to take my daughter. If I am talking with a client on Zoom, then she's got to take her. So it's been really tough to juggle. But we've still had success despite that. I think that might be the most thing I'm proud of, is I've still been able to do this with, such limited time.
That is incredible. It must be, a lot of juggling, a lot of communication with you and your spouse. And
it's not a long-term solution, but it's what we had to make work for those, you know, the first few months. So
sure. That's what you call life work integration right there, where you are literally like making calls while you're taking your daughter for a walk. And hats off to you, man. That's
awesome. Funny though, because it's such a down to earth industry. Well, I'll be on the phone with a candidate or something like that. And then, you know, she'll be making noise in the background or something. And they'll be like, oh, you got a little one. Like, I have mine as well. I get it. No worries at all. So it's been great. It's actually provided a little bit more of a personal connection with some of these.
Yeah, I get that for sure. I think people are, especially post-COVID, people are understanding of, you know, that's just the way the world is now, right? Is
sure.
The personal and the professional have kind of, you know, blended together a lot more than in the past. So is there anything else you're doing in terms of becoming the go-to recruiter for the steel industry?
Yeah, I mean, so next year I plan on going to a bunch of conferences. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a conference down in Tampa down in February that we've already signed up for. We'll be going to that. There's a big conference called SMU, which takes place in August. I wasn't able to go this year, but next year I plan on going to that as well. You know, possibly doing some advertising with some of these organizations that sponsor these conferences. We'll be doing that because I do want to have that in-person connection as well. I think that's big. The video aspect, I think if anyone takes us up on that, that'll provide more of a deep connection with our clients and, help us spread the word. And then the podcast, right? We're going to be getting interviews with people, talking with different people, getting that out on social media, and then hopefully getting some inbound stuff from there. So anywhere in the industry, I just want them to see me. I want to be there, and I think we'll be doing our job.
Amazing. That is, I like the plan. I think that sounds very doable and effective, Tyler. So is there anything we haven't talked about that you wanted to discuss today?
Yeah, I think, you know, look, I'm nowhere where I want to be as a recruiter or as a headhunter. I'm still very in the early phases, have a lot to learn. And your podcast has been a godsend as far as some of the people to learn from here. But I would just say to anybody listening, especially those that are looking to get into the business, it's very, very important to become a go-to authority. And no matter how small the niche is, even like you said, you talk with somebody that's doing CPAs in Ohio, that might be all you need to get a network going, to make a living yourself, and then you expand from there, right? You can't go big and then get everything at once. It's little by little, step by step. And we're taking our first steps right now with the steel industry and the metals industry, and so far it's working, and who knows how it's going to go from there.
Fantastic, Tyler. Well, look, let's do this again, and you can tell me the next chapter in your journey. Maybe in a year's time, we'll see how things have developed from there. But
sure.
Really, really enjoyed having you on the show, Tyler. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark. Absolute pleasure.
Thanks for watching. If you enjoyed this conversation, check out some of my other episodes. You'll see one or two suggested episodes on the screen now.